Andreasen.
Hey, Rick.
Welcome to Yada USA. Really nice to sit and meet with you. This is fun.
Yeah, unexpected, but hopefully fun.
Well, sometimes the best things are unexpected, right?
Exactly.
All of a sudden, you know, this all started from a conversation we had yesterday at the mm-hmm. Superyacht Forum, and I thought, we need to talk about this.
Yeah.
So, but then you look back at the whole thing, and it's like, wow, you know, we all have a history coming here, and we're here in Amsterdam at the Superyacht Forum, and we're all here for our own reasons. Mm-hmm. Now, you're with Edmundsen.
Yep, Edmundsen Yacht Management,
right?
Based in Monaco.
Yep.
And with an office in London as well.
Yes, exactly. Very familiar with you guys. In fact, I remember many, many years of going to the Monaco Yacht Show and seeing the red logo on all the courtesy cars driving around town going, man, now there you go. There's a VIP treatment for you.
Yeah, it's the red team.
It's the red team, yeah. And not sure if you were aware, but I was working for 2 years with Frank Jensen. I started the JMS USA program quite successfully. Left that a year ago. And here we are talking to the whole world about the wonderful world of yachting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So before we dive into kind of what we touched on yesterday, give me and everybody listening just a quick synopsis of your career. What's brought you here? You've been in it for a while.
Oh, yeah. I've been in yachting for quite some time. I'm nearly 60 years old, and I joined the Navy when I was 16.
Navy at 16?
Yeah, I was a junior seaman second class. I don't think you can get much lower until you become a midshipman, and then that's probably even lower. graduated Naval Academy, and then I did over 10 years in the Navy.
You did the Academy program too then?
Yeah.
What kind of vessels were you serving on?
Mine hunters, patrol boats, a couple of frigates.
All right.
So generally smaller stuff.
My oldest son did 5 years in the U.S. Navy as submariner.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, okay.
They ask you, so have you ever considered submarines? And you go, yeah. And they go, oh, great. And I consider submarines. And that's about the end of it.
He really enjoyed his time on those boats. It takes a special breed,
yeah,
I think.
Many of my chief engineers as an operational captain have been submariners. And quite frankly, they're the best ones that you can get because they know systems. On a submarine, part of getting your dolphins in the Royal Navy is tracing systems and learning what every single pipe and valve does. And these guys, they know it inside out. So for a yacht, they're perfect because it's only a small engineering team.
That's right.
And you've got to rely on them. So
Yeah. On those boats, you know, you don't have an option sometimes. You got to fix it.
I mean, on a yacht, you're the worst. You should just drift around. On a submarine, you better get on with it.
You better get on with it real quick. Yeah. Next man up kind of thing, for sure. You know, that's fun. So you had a naval career, which is, I think, for anybody listening, it's an amazing foundation as a mariner. You know, it really does set the nuts and bolts for everything else that comes forward.
Yeah, and I think that, for me, coming into yachting then a few years after I left and having been in yachts now for a long time, the training that we got is what has set me up. And it's something that concerns me in yachting that people can come into the business with just a week of basic safety and then be stuck on a yacht. And this is where we got chatting yesterday.
This is where we got chatting yesterday.
Where they're on some of the most expensive vessels. They're with some of the most influential people on the planet. They got a week of safety training and they knew somebody or they got lucky and they're in a role. And I think it's a concern. The youngsters don't think about the depth of what the concern should be. They just think we're lucky to have a job, and they are. We work in an amazing business. If they thought for a minute about the responsibility that lies with them, because yachts have very small crew.
Yes, they do.
If you put it in the grand scheme.
They're very much overworked. You know,
exactly.
The expectations are high.
Expectations are high from day one. And the only passengers, I used to say this as a captain, the only passengers we carry live in the guest cabins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cliche, but it's true. And if you're on a crew of 9, 13, 16, 20, 25, 35, you know, if I go from 40 through to sort of 90-meter yachts, you've all got a role to play. And bigger boats can carry some green crew, yes, because you can absorb that lack of knowledge. But more often than not, you just have to get on with it.
No, you do. You do. And you learn a lot of things quickly, but don't necessarily learn a lot of things well.
Yeah, there's no depth.
Right.
And I think, I can't remember the number, we've heard it bandied around, whether it's 430, 470 yachts in build or something. I don't remember exactly what it is, but they've all got to be crewed somehow.
That's right.
And we already have a very shallow pool of experience And that's only going to get shallower as we try and put more and more people in.
That's so true. I interviewed a few months ago the owner of Resolve Academy, mm-hmm. Lana Farrell, and a couple of her people, Will Williamson and Chauncey Naylor, three really professional individuals. And Will and Chauncey come from the same type of background you do and are very strong in the maritime. And if you go through their academy, they've got probably the best in the United States firefighting academy. Mm-hmm. Have you been there? Have you seen
it? I know exactly where it is. Yeah, I have. I've been there, but I haven't
in the
trained
port.
There.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep. I walked through there a couple hours after they had done some training, and it was still 140 degrees mm-hmm. inside that steel, and you could smell the fire. And they had a section for damage control where they literally flood it while you're trying to shut down the. And while you know you're not going to perish in this situation, the water's coming chest deep mm-hmm. on you as you're trying to stop this flow of water. And it's yep. close to as real as it gets.
Yeah, we have it. And the smart ones are the ones who stop the leaks coming at you from above, because otherwise you're just getting doused the entire time.
That's right.
Stop those leaks first, because otherwise you can't concentrate. And then it gets colder. And so the incentive is to fix the leaks pretty damn quick, otherwise it gets very cold.
Yeah. Yeah, even in Florida, it gets cold enough that you want to get it done.
You should try doing it in the south of England.
No, thank you. So the good news is, coming from my part of the world, there are a couple training academies that are doing anywhere from an okay job to a fairly exceptional job. But if you talk to them, they'll tell you the same thing. Trying to find the candidates to come in or convince the crews. Remember, in South Florida, in Fort Lauderdale particularly, at some point in time during the year, almost every significant yacht crew transits mm-hmm. through that. And part of the conversations that I think need to be had, from my perspective, is with the owners and the owner's family office and the yacht management companies that are managing these boats to say, okay, time out here. You're in a location where you've got resources and the ability to enhance your crew training. You know, you need to give over a week or 10 days of your itinerary to put your people through. Now, that's a big ask, week to 10 days. But even if you can get a few days out of that to put your crew through continual training, mm-hmm. you step it up just a little bit.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The challenge will always be, and the argument is always difficult. Well, it's not difficult, but the argument will always be, but I'm charting my yacht out at $250,000 a week, $2.5 million a week, and you want me to give that money up. And you say, well, yeah, I get it. We need to find the time out with those seasons. Mm-hmm. But that's when maintenance is. Okay, fine, very good. So that's the maintenance on the yacht. What about the maintenance on the people?
There you go. That's so important.
This is the thing that, and I'm new to a yacht management department, and I'm coming from an operational background. So I have a look at it from very purist operational side. And we've just come out of the forum discussion about managing the unmanageable, being yacht management, and it was actually a very interesting discussion, and I'm glad I was in there. It's the non-sexy part of yachting. Mm-hmm. The brokers have their role. They have their clients. They're very protective of their clients in all ways, as they should be. It's confidential, and it's taken them years to develop a relationship.
That's right.
They hand it over to us, and we are perhaps seen as the enemy a little bit, because we make reality happen, but in order to make reality happen, we have to sometimes amend the dream that was sold in the first place. That can be financial, it can be time, it can be, yes, you're not going to keep these people forever. Some owners love their crew like family, some owners really could treat them as staff, they don't really care, that's fine.
Right.
You know, it's horses for courses. So many moving parts within what I do, or my team and I, you know, I mean, there's lots of yacht management companies out there, and thankfully, most of them, I would suggest, are friends,
right.
The leaders in those companies. So we can swap the good bits and we can discuss the bad bits. And hopefully we'll all get better, because there's plenty of business and we've all got a common aim. And the common aim is safety and looking after the people.
It should be. The collaboration's important. I've always been a huge advocate in this industry that collaboration is what progresses us and makes us better. You know, and then when you look at these conversations and you understand the human factor that comes into play here. Look at aviation, for instance. And in aviation, it's legislated, it's established that mm-hmm. X number of hours you go back into the simulator, you go back into training. You don't go year after year after year without updating your training, and that's just part of the mandate. We have the MLC, we've got MCAs involved, you've got class and flag. There are institutions that exist within our industry. I use that word industry.
Come there in a minute.
that potentially could become more involved with the human factor, the safety piece of it. I think it's certainly a conversation that needs to be promoted way more than it is right now.
Yeah, I think we just go back to training and the depth of a pool of talent and look at who trains people on yachts. Well, we have very good training providers ashore, but as you said, you only go back every 5 years to do some safety and not much else. And then you end up with the training on board. And the training on board is invariably carried out by the senior crew. But who's training them? You can't mark your own homework.
No.
So we, the company I work for, and because of my own approach to this, even when I was an operational captain, I've taken a very Navy approach and I've brought in outside training teams.
Okay.
So I've been lucky enough to do 3 new builds. And as we got to the end of those, we'd bring in a training team for firefighting, damage control, medical, crowd control, these sort of elements for training, so that I was on the bridge with a safety plan and I was having to command and control the operation from the bridge and somebody was assessing my command and control. If you only ever have training done by captains and senior officers on board, nobody's actually looking at them. And we're here in Amsterdam and I've been lucky. I've done Fed ships and arguably the best yachts in the world. And certainly, I've loved being on those vessels. You spend a year or sometimes longer in the build process. And then you're a passenger when it's out on trials because they have the shipyard trials captain. So
yep.
You watch what's going on. And then you take over the boat and then you haven't driven anything for a year, maybe more. And the next thing you do is take the shiniest, newest, smartest, most expensive Fed ship ever.
Possibly with new technology.
With new technology and you yep. drive it down the North Sea Canal through the locks of the Isselmere and take it into the North Sea. Now, anybody tells me you don't have skill fade when you've been ashore for that long and
right.
Is probably a little bit delusional. So I think we need to have more training. Shipyards, thankfully, are embracing this.
Good.
The academies within, I know Ocean Co., we were talking about doing that, FedShip, do it. But I think it's more about trade people than it is necessarily about crews, but that should be coming in.
Right.
But if more people will bring in outside trainers, and it's not mandated by the MCA, that is a problem.
Yes.
It is. One company we use now has accreditation by the Nautical Institute for
okay.
continuous professional development, and I think that's very important because now people get a bit of paper. Because we all like bits of paper.
Of course,
done
looks good on the wall, doesn't it?
Great. So having that is a good thing. But until onboard training is accepted or mandated, then
right.
we're always going to struggle. Right. You won't struggle with me because I've done it as an operator. So now as a manager, I'm putting that money into the budget.
Yeah, but Chris, so, I dare say you're more the exception than the rule in the industry.
Well, maybe I am. But I mean, fortunately, there's some really good people doing this business. And, I could mention AJ as an example, who's a
Absolutely.
Friend of mine, he was a captain, one build ahead of me at FedShip. So he's an operator who's now turned his business into an exceptional success
Probably
story.
Probably one of the best in the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So he's great. And I can't model my business on him because he does management and I work for a brokerage house and we have a management arm. But
right.
I've respected him and looked at him, of how to do it. And I said to him only yesterday, I said, well, if you're an operator and you turned into a success, maybe I can too. And there are others as well, but not many companies have people with recent operation
no.
experience.
No,
lots of them do. And I've always been a bit of a purist when it came to training because I've been on a crew of 500 on a destroyer.
That's right.
And then I've been on a crew of 9 on a yacht.
Yeah.
And on 500, we knew, there were departments to deal with everything that could possibly go wrong. On 9, you better have a plan in place because you haven't got much backup.
No, there's no backup, actually. You know, everybody should be cross-trained to do everybody else's job, no question.
Exactly.
You're familiar with the term deviation of normalcy, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that when I have these conversations with people, oftentimes I get this blank look like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what happens when you go for a period of time, whether you're in the yard in a build period and you're not actually hands-on operating the vessel, or you've gone 2 years or more between training sessions just doing the same thing. In fact, it's more, I think there's more peril associated with deviation of normalcy when you are continuously operating,
mm-hmm.
because that's when you kind of push the envelope a little bit. I remember seeing a video that came out, I think it was on LinkedIn 6 months ago or so. And here's a large yacht, probably 60 plus meters, with an Intrepid tender coming up underneath the anchor pocket. And there's a bosun or a first sitting on the bow of the Intrepid with a 5-pound maul swinging at this anchor, trying to break her loose. And I'm thinking, what could possibly go wrong here? You know, and yet this is the type of thing that happens all the time. And why do you think the captain let that happen? Probably has done it before.
No, but yeah,
and nothing
went
happened.
Wrong. Nothing went wrong.
And he did it this time, and nothing bad happened.
Look,
you know,
people think they're immortal, and yet the weakest link on anything we do is the pink squidgy thing, and the pink squidgy thing is us. Right? And we're not immortal, and accidents happen. And you know, I've been at sea where I've seen enough and experienced enough accidents and emergencies and fires and bits and pieces to know that it isn't all utopian Instagram.
No.
Look at us in the sunshine.
No.
It's far from it.
I was fortunate in starting my maritime career. I went to FIT in Jensen Beach, Florida, and I got a degree in underwater technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 4.5, almost 5 years working offshore as a commercial diver. So I was on lay barges sometimes for 12, 15 weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Running pipelines and doing saturation diving and bell bounce diving and all of that. And I was 20 years old and I was immortal.
Mm-hmm.
But the training that we went through to step on board those vessels and to get into those systems was extensive. And the layers of safety were spectacular. And while, I saw some horrible things occasionally, that was fortunately more the exception than the rule. I would dare say in some cases, some of the yachting practices I've observed in the last almost 4 decades of my career rival or exceed some of the things I saw in the commercial offshore industry.
Yeah. In yachting, everything's about fun and it's about operating somebody's toy. You've come from commercial diving. We talked about aviation earlier. Nobody cuts corners in aviation.
Better not.
Things fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
You always say on helicopters, you know, there's a toolbox and everything's got a place. And if there's a piece missing at the end, well, guess what? That aircraft's not flying. So, you know, until you found that piece.
Right.
Now, in yachting, people are always pressured to cut corners and the foolhardy will cut corners. I tried not to cut corners, but did I always do everything 100% by the book as an operational captain? No, I'm not going
to
lie. I'm not some superhero
it's
angel.
It's almost impossible
God, no.
Yeah.
But when I look at some of the things I did and I can picture one or two in my head right now, I think, my God, I got away with that. Thank God I did. You know, flybys in tenders.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
great
yeah.
fun. Just yeehaw,
well,
look at us go.
Yeah. You know, well, you see so many videos, marketing videos of flybys by tenders,
yeah,
right?
And it looks great fun and it is. But if it goes wrong, it's going to go wrong in a hurry.
Right.
And, you know, there's enough bad press about yachting at the moment with, you know, natural disasters and all sorts of extra hazards that get thrown in,
you know,
lithium batteries being an absolute classic at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Accidents will happen regardless. We don't need to be making them happen through sort of stupidity and foolhardiness. And that I'm not trying to be the fun police because, you know, yachting can be an amazing career and it can be great fun and it should be fun because that's why owners have yachts, right? And
that's right.
It's either privacy, total isolated business, or pure fun. They're sort of, I don't know, and, you know, some it used to be more of a status thing. That would be some elements of people as well, but I think there's less of that nowadays.
Much less of that, I think.
Much less of
yeah.
that nowadays. I think it is privacy, the ability to take your family places that other people cannot go because you've been successful, so why not?
Right.
That sort of stuff. So it needs to be fun, but it has to be regulated. And the people who are the regulators are the crew, So the guests should be having fun. The crew should be enjoying themselves. But I argue that there's a limit between having fun and enjoying yourself, because having fun can sometimes be a little bit too much.
Well, and that's part of it, because, again, you've got 19, 20, 24-year-old kids, really, that are, some are for the very first time on their own, yeah, and in a real job, given huge responsibilities they probably had no idea they were signing up for when they did. You know, and then the conversation turns around to the well-being of the crew, the mental health of the crew, all of this. Something that I have been bringing up lately, and it's an interesting feedback loop that's coming back to me on this, is I've set mine aside over there, but the cell phone. I've talked to so many captains who are struggling with a balance. Some now have gotten to the to a policy where they basically have all the cell phones go into a basket before the crew goes on deck. But I dare say even in the crew mess, the cell phone's a problem, because you're not disconnecting from the world. You're bringing in all the drama of your friends and family and associates. You're wanting to be plugged into that. So whether you're on deck and hiding around a corner someplace to throw out a couple texts or to watch a little video or to make a quick phone call, or whether you're sitting in the crew mess listening to your girlfriend explain to you why she's breaking up with you now. And, you know, all of that comes into play here, and you're trying to put together a healthy family that's going to work cohesively together. And I see that communication technology being a significant driving force into issues we have with crew right now.
Yeah, I think there are issues and there are benefits. So, you know, once upon a time, you used to be able to sail across the Atlantic and nobody bother you for 2 weeks.
That's
right.
It
was amazing. On the flip side, you couldn't really check the weather that often, so sometimes you get caught out. So I wouldn't turn the clock back to those days. Nowadays, you know, Starlink being an absolute game changer, you know, highest internet speed, better than home sometimes, you know, and you can have a phone call mid-Atlantic. Fantastic. But of course, if somebody does get a phone call mid-Atlantic and it's a real problem at home, basically you might as well be on another planet because you're that far away.
Right. So you're not going anywhere.
You can't do anything about it. And I think that is a danger, because young people, depending on their background, depending where they've come from, some are not as resilient as others. That's a fact.
That is a total fact.
So if you've got resilient ones, great. If you've got some who are less resilient, who are perhaps a little bit on the edge anyway, and something happens in the middle of an ocean, you can have a problem. You've got to be super careful with your people. So I think having the communication we do now is amazing. The downside is that everything can be sensationalized. Accidents, emergencies, natural disasters, I don't need to mention them. You know, they've been all over this. People are sharing stuff within 30 seconds.
Right.
As long as it takes the video, it's downloaded, it's on 5G or it's through satellite or whatever it is, and it's gone.
It's out.
And it's absolutely gone wild everywhere. And people will comment. Now, there are just the stupid comments, fine, because people are trying to be funny. And then there are the opinionated comments, and they can be dangerous because nobody knows what's happened.
Right.
And then there are the caring comments, which are the ones that actually we should probably be more of, because until we know what's happened in a scenario, frankly, why do people have opinions?
Right.
You know, speculation is rife. Speculation is horrible.
It is.
And it victimizes people as well.
Yep.
I feel terrible for the people on the sailboat. You know, I mean, that's awful.
You know, hopefully that's an industry lesson. We can look at this and say, this is how you do not deal with catastrophes, because there is too much speculation around that particular incident. And, you know, until all of the investigations are done and everything is properly understood, it would be horrible to throw any of the crew or any of the circumstances under the bus. But that seemed to be like the first thing that everybody wanted to do.
Yeah.
And,
criminalization of captains is something that is, that was a hot topic, and I don't hear it as much, but it definitely is there, because it's right here, right now, this summer.
Yeah.
People don't like heroes. They prefer villains. I think that is a sad case. Good news doesn't always make the news. Bad news definitely makes the news.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah. So I think we have to be much more responsible within yachting. And there are people who have opinions, and I've sat there and watched the TV and shook my head and gone, okay, well, you know, it's up to you if you want to do it. I certainly wouldn't. Why do they do it? I don't know. I think we need to be more caring as a business. Absolutely. Because the people on that particular incident, people's lives were changed or ended that day.
So
we need to look after people.
Nobody on that boat will be ever the same. No. You know, no matter what your role was in the circumstances that day, it was horrible.
It's awful. So I think, I mean, that's just one of many things. I think if we looked at what incidents happen on yachting and we could take a snapshot of them and learn from them, we'd do a lot better. I'm going to do a selfless plug for a charity that I'm involved
Please
with.
Please do.
Okay?
In fact, let me preface that by saying one of the things that I really enjoy talking about on my show is the concept of doing well for others. Mm. And I'm a big advocate for people who are in a position where they can support charities and organizations that are out there to help lift up other people to do so. So I'd love to hear about what you do.
Well, there's two things. So CHIRP, Confidential Human Influence Accident Reporting Program.
Touching on that just before we walked up here. Yes.
CHIRP, I'm a part of the Maritime Advisory Board. There's quite a few of us here at the forum this week, which is great to see. And last year, I actually sat on a panel to talk about it, headed up by a guy called Paul Shepherd. He's the yacht side.
I know Paul.
Adam Parnell is the boss. It's been in commercial shipping and aviation for a long time. We now have a super yacht side. So
brilliant.
If people see something silly or are aware of something that's got a human factor, they can report it confidentially. We as the advisory board quarterly get all the reports that come in. We review them. We give a professional opinion. We have pursers, captains, chief engineers, and all sorts on that board. And then we come out with a digest.
Right.
And hopefully by promoting that, people will read it and go, Christ, I did that. Or, oh my God, I saw that somewhere else. Maybe we shouldn't do that. So it's making people aware confidentially, no axe to grind, no judgment.
Right. No fault finding.
Exactly that. And we're making it aware of that. So I think that is absolutely a critical part of yachting because it is confidential and anybody can report it. The other charity that I'm involved, I'm a trustee of an organization called Sail to Help. It's run by a friend of mine, Captain Tim Davies. He's lost his brother and his eldest son to suicide. Now, with a lot of young people suffering from their mental health, and I'll come to why I think some of that in a minute, but Tim set up this charity to help young people affected or families affected by suicide. And I can see you, Barun, because I know a little bit of what's going on. He's here at the forum and at Metz at the moment, and he's got the sailing charity to that. So I'm a part of that. I'm a trustee.
So Chris, you may or may not be aware, I don't assume everybody is, that I lost my middle son to suicide this past August.
Just recently, didn't you?
I know.
And I didn't want to mention it because I remember reading it and I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to mention this anyhow.
Thank you. Because coming away from that, as devastating as that experience is, and I would tell you that I've been through a lot in my career and in my life, and there's absolutely nothing that touches the devastation and the impact I've felt from the suicide of my son. But I've determined that I'm going to come out of this with a mindset of bringing awareness of the fragility that young people have. I have my own opinions as to why he did what he did. And it has a lot to do with disconnecting from society, being addicted to virtual reality, video games, that type of thing. And being disconnected from human beings because he's existing in a virtual world. Then you get adulting pressures that come in, things he was ill-prepared to deal with. And so anytime I have the opportunity to help someone advocate, then I'm your best support network.
Well,
in that.
I'm going to do an intro to you after this podcast because Tim's here.
Good.
So you do sadly have something very much in common, and I think we'll talk about that. But you mentioned the word fragility.
Yes.
And I think let's talk leadership in yachting.
Please.
And I did a webinar for a crew agency last week, and it was about this and about how I've got to where I am, and I'm very lucky to be in a position now where I lead a management division of a very well-regarded brokerage house, so I have a bit of a platform, and I use that platform. It's not soapbox, all right? I think that's a very, very clear differentiation.
Absolutely.
So I can talk about having come from an organization that prides itself on leadership training into an organization an industry or not an industry, a business that we're in of yachting, where we need to do more, because the fragility of the younger people is something that we're not addressing as the elders in the business. And we're relying on that generation of fragile people becoming leaders in their own right. So if you then have fragile people being led by fragile leaders, it's a recipe for disaster.
It is, absolutely. And I have to ask the question, because I've had people ask me this and I've got my own opinions, but you and I grew up in pretty much close to the same time period. I wouldn't describe us as being very fragile people, you know, in our late teens, early 20s. What's changed?
I think communication's changed. And as we said before, that's a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
People used to have opinions. You go down the pub, you talk your opinion, everyone say how great you were, and then you go home and nobody do anything about it.
Right.
Nowadays, you can have an opinion and 10 million people will listen to it, or 40 to 60,000 as we are, perhaps, with this podcast.
That's right.
Hey, I'm allowed to say it because you said you did it. Opinions are like arseholes. We've all got them.
We've got them,
so,
absolutely.
I try not to be opinionated, but I have experience on which to base my opinions.
Right.
And I think perhaps that helps. I try and mentor people because I know how many mistakes I've made on the way up.
Yep.
People are going to make their own mistakes, as they should. But hopefully there'll be mistakes that they can recover from.
I have a little post-it on my monitor that says failure is the first step towards success. Hmm. And, you know, I agree people should be allowed to fail.
And
you know, within the context of, for instance, my son that's with us here today, behind the cameras making this happen for me, is I tell him, I put up the guardrails for you and give you the keys. I don't care if you bring the car back with the fenders beat up. I just don't want you to go off the cliff.
Yeah. I always say, I open the door. Well, how you do it? What do you choose to go through it, or do you not? That's your call and time.
That's right. That's right. Now, I'm a big fan of Dr. Jordan Peterson, if you ever listen to him. And he talks about how if you don't let your children fail, you set them up for a lifetime of catastrophe.
We can't all be winners.
No.
We're all winners. We'd all own yachts. But who the hell would crew?
Hold on a second. I know a lot of yacht owners that I wouldn't put in the category of winners either. So.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, then you probably know a Warren Buffett quote, yeah? I've known plenty of people who are, no, what is it? Something like, I know a lot of arseholes are billionaires, but they were arseholes long before they were billionaires,
there
or something
go,
along those lines. So, but that happens. Yeah.
Sometimes you fail upwards too. So,
I think fragility of people and people wanting to emulate everything they see on Instagram or whatever it is. And I used to always say, you know, young crew, the bigger the sunglasses were, you know, to the point where they became rock stars, you know, each year in, out, their sunglasses would get bigger because that's what they'd seen ashore in Saint-Tropez.
Ah.
And they were trying to live the yachting life, but forgetting that they were crew.
Right.
And I think, so emulating, aspiration, these are things that can weaken people.
Right.
There are people who do very well. And as it's just come into my head, a former deckhand of mine, deck engineer, now owns his own 40-meter yacht.
Okay.
Now, he was a great lad, and he was an extremely good engineer. And guess what? He became a probably even better engineer because he set up a robotics company and bought his own 40-meter yacht not that long ago. So
brilliant.
Yeah, so there is no ceiling.
No,
you
know, there shouldn't be.
You can get wherever you get, but just because you don't all get there, you shouldn't think you're a failure.
No, exactly not. We're all our own successes in our own rights. You just have to understand the space you're working in and be real with yourself. It's an interesting conversation because when you talk about whether it's the crew space or the circumstances that my son Aiden went through, you want to try to understand how we can help this generation become stronger people and more confident in themselves as both people and professionals, and learn how to live their best life. And it's a big ask. I really think so. But if we don't pay attention to it, then the repercussions are going to be catastrophic.
It can be a perfect storm of expectation versus reality. And if everybody expects to be the captain or the purser or the chief engineer or the owner, then reality is going to bite
That's
in
right.
a hurry. So we can't manage that. Let's face it, you and I, we're never going to change that. But what we can do is perhaps help people to manage their expectations and train them to the level that they need to be.
One of my best friends and business partners, Captain Herb Magny, has a saying that I love. He's like, not everybody can be the astronaut.
No.
But you can get them to the moon.
That's true.
So it takes a team, and sometimes it's just good enough to know that you're on this winning team and that you're part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. I think if you get to work on a super yacht, you've done pretty well. You get to come out of the top end of it, you're very lucky. I mean, you've done very well, you're very lucky.
Right.
You get lucky breaks. I'm not going to pretend for an instant that I didn't get lucky breaks to get where I am. God, had some amazing people who helped me on the pathway. I took a few chances myself, grabbed an opportunity that came up, but without the people,
right?
No chance. There's a lot of people who work very hard and don't get anywhere. They just don't get a lucky break.
No, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah,
but that's real. That's the world we live in.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So let me ask you this, Chris. When we're talking about and trying to bring the space in a better place for crew, for owners, for the whole industry again, the role of the yacht management company, is it understated? Is it overstated? What's that look like?
It's a very complex thing. Having listened to the panel just now, and I'm sat at the back nodding my head, thinking I've been in yacht management for 9 months now. And I didn't pretend for an instant I knew what yacht management really was when I joined, and I'm not going to pretend for an instant that I got all the answers 9 months in.
Right, right.
Listening to some of the panel, there was 5 years. I'm thinking, goodness, I'll be retired in 5 years. but I think we shouldn't be the enemy. I think that's key. I, as an operational captain, I didn't really request much of the manager. I didn't want to be managed.
Sure.
And I'm trying to put that across in our company that we don't. To manage is to be perhaps overbearing if you're not correct, if you don't do it properly.
Right.
To be supportive is a whole different game. And there are people who get to their role who quite do need some managing. But the smart ones are the ones who recognize they need some managing, because within that management, you can be supportive. And then there are the very, very good ones who, frankly, don't need managing at all, but they need operational support.
So
to back them up,
because
there aren't enough hours in the day, and a captain's job from when I started it to last year I was at sea, it was the last time. It's an office job where the view changes. That's how I always describe a captain's job nowadays. And occasionally you get to put your hands on the sticks and have the fun bit, which is parking.
Right, but that's a small,
but it's a tiny element,
tiny piece of running.
It's the tiniest bit, and in some ways it's the easiest bit, because if the wind's too strong, you don't do it, and if the wind's quite strong, you just got to be a bit smart. And technology being what it is now, you have some amazing tools to allow you to dock the vessel. So
and make you look like a hero.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But you're only ever as good as the guy calling on or the girl calling on the stern, right? And I've always said that, because it doesn't matter how good I think I am up on the sticks. If somebody calls the distance wrong at the back end, you're still going to hit the dock.
Well, so you fundamentally know there's some clown up on the dock with a camera that's going to go on YouTube hours once you've done it. So
So, that's driving them to actually managing them on board as the captain, as they should be, and the heads of department.
Right.
And another organization, because we're in the plug business, BZ Maritime Leadership. Two ex-Navy colleagues of mine, they run a maritime leadership company. We have a leader network, and any captains listening, I would encourage them to join. There's 160, as of last week, captains or senior officers on board, which is good.
Fantastic.
Leader, I never remember, and Carl, the boss will kill me for this, but it's learn, explore, advise, develop. Might be experience and reflect, I think, for leader. I can't remember exactly.
That sounds about right.
Something like that. And do a monthly webinar. And the last one, which was last week, which conflicted with something I was doing, but it was the loneliness of command.
Mm.
And I think that it was an expression used to be used in the Navy.
Where I've heard it from.
Naval captains are not members of the officer's mess, the wardroom, as we call it. They live on their own. They have depending on the size of the vessel, they have a steward to take care of all the sort of householdy bits, and they dine alone, and they have to be invited to the wardroom, because you can't be too pally with your officers on a warship, because you might need to send them to die, or you might need to discipline them. So you have to be
a little bit distanced.
Now on a yacht, the same factors apply in terms of unlikely to sending them to die, hopefully not, but certainly from a disciplinary point of view, you have to do it. So But I think the loneliness of command can be shared if you learn to trust your people and rely on your people. And all of a sudden, yes, the buck stops with you.
Right.
And you've got to make that decision as the master. That's why you're there. But it doesn't have to be a lonely place, because you should be involving everybody on board. And I don't care what rank that person is, from the laundry to the deck to the service. Every person has a piece of the puzzle to play. And as the captain, you need to be able to engage with every single one of them.
So I was sitting in on a conference yesterday. We touched on this, where you talk about the captain's job potentially can be the loneliest position on the boat. We lose sight of the fact that these are human beings too, that have emotional fragility at times. Yeah. And, you know, the stress of being the in command and having to deal with the owner and the yacht management company and the crew you know, we just lost a captain to suicide a week ago in Fort Lauderdale. And that was really, really tragic, unexpected. And it was just a reminder that, you know, these strong men, you know, can hit their wall sometimes. And we need to be compassionate and aware of, you know, how lonely it is at the top. And you know, incorporate that into our thinking as well. Sometimes I think the captains are excluded a little bit because it's all the crew below.
I think people put up shields as well, as the captain, and they are defense mechanisms, and sometimes they don't reflect well to their crew. And I pride myself, and if there's any crew listening, they would hopefully agree. They'll only ever hear me shout if there was an emergency. I think they used to be more worried when I went very quiet, actually.
They should probably.
So, you know, I've been less tolerant of people because I've been under pressure myself, and I've perhaps, you know, been a bit facetious in my response or something. And I can remember these are, you know, mistakes I've made on my way up that I, you know, hopefully share, that people don't make the same mistakes. But it's a tough place. I have friends here at the Foroy in Amsterdam who been crew of mine, you know, from deck and up, and they're captains in their own right now. And I remember before the Fort Lauderdale boat show a few years ago, I was sat up in Rybovich having a beer, and I was on a yacht that wasn't going anywhere. We weren't, and this captain was there, and he knew he had to make the tide out of Rybovich into Fort Lauderdale for the boat show, and the weather was against him. And he looked at me and he said, "Oh God, the weather." And I went, "Yeah, well, yeah. Now you know how I feel. All those years when we were sailing together, and you were going, but why is Chris looking around and wondering what to do?"
Right.
I'm like, "Well, you're in that situation now, so, you know."
It's a multifaceted discipline here.
I had another sip of my beer and said, "You'll be fine," and he was.
And he progressed in his learning curve just a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if young crew look at the captain not as, "Oh, God, that's the person who has half a year off and earns a fortune," but if that person earned his or her stripes, because, you know, I've had some really good female officers, and I'm a great advocate for that. My mother was chairman of the British Women Racing Drivers Club a long time ago, so I grew up with very, very powerful, influential women. And even though I'm of my age, I've learned that from very young, so
right.
I don't care, you know,
the male or female,
get on with it.
Right.
So I think, yeah, if people understood that the person at the top has earned, more often than not, earned the stripes, and some people don't earn them as much as others. That's a fact.
Granted.
Then don't aspire to be something quite yet. Enjoy the period without the responsibility. I think that's also critical.
No.
They
you're,
all want
you're
that
right.
next rank because all they see is the money. What they don't see is the responsibility right. that comes with it, because, you know, with great rank comes great responsibility. Rank hath its privilege. That's another comment that I can use too. But you don't get it for nothing.
No.
And people don't understand that.
No.
I think that's...
And I think most young people that I mentor, and I do mentor with YPY and make myself available to anybody who really wants to learn more about this industry, I'm happy to share, is the long view. And there's a sense of younger people, younger generation right now, where they want everything right now.
Mm.
That, you know, I see what I want. I want to get there. And I try to tell people that, you know, you need to lay a foundation. You need to give yourself time to become expert in what you're doing so that you have something to work from to get to the next level and the next level. And, you know, good things normally do come over time, not immediate instant gratification.
They do. So, I remember, and I said this on a webinar last week, a good friend who I hired him at 21 years of age with his unlimited Austal Watch certificate of competency back in, goodness, 2001. He came to the yacht. He said, oh, I'm going to be chief mate in 6 months' time. And I went, okay, there's actually a bit more to learn. So off he went, and he came back to me and went, there's a bit more to learn in this business, isn't there? And I went, yeah, there is. Yeah. Why don't you give me 2 years? You are, okay.
I set expectations a little bit better.
Yep. 2 years later, he came to me, having had a great time. I'd given him Austal Watch responsibilities on board, so he had that to keep his license going and stuff, but he'd also been doing an awful lot of cleaning and tender driving and enjoying himself with the guests, and, you know, when he wasn't with the guests as well. And then he came to me and I said, oh, it's 2 years, isn't it? You're off. And he went, yep. And I went, good luck. Well done. Well, he's captain on a 100-meter fed ship now, and he's done all sorts of other stuff in the meantime.
Brilliant.
But he has respect because although he had a commercial ticket, he came in at the bottom.
Right.
And he learned it the hard way. And he did his time on deck, and now nobody can say to him that he hasn't done it. And I think, and I know several other commercial officers, and I've given them the first lucky break as well, because everyone needs it, as we said. And they are also senior officers now on big yachts. They have credibility. So I think, you know, we talked about training, and I'm perhaps going around the circles a little bit here, but
that's okay.
But I think, you know, we're in a business where there isn't enough training for yacht crew coming in, and we have some extremely well-trained mariners coming in who've done cadet ships, deck or engine, and they all want to come in at the top. And I think at a certain age range, fair enough, you've probably done your time, and it's difficult to get a deckhand's job at 40, that's a fact. But I think more and more young officers who come in from cruise ships or that sort of, you know, smaller cargo vessels perhaps, it doesn't suit everybody, come in, do your time. Do a bit of time on deck.
That's right.
Yeah, be a bit humble. It'll pay off, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
5-10 years down the track, that will reap dividends that you don't even think about at the moment.
No, because you're coming into new space, and in the yachting industry is a unique, special place.
Yeah.
You don't find it replicated anywhere else.
No, isn't it? I mean, now is it an industry? We pull people in, we turn them into something, we spit them out at the end. That's what industry does, isn't it? You know, you take raw material and you turn it into a product, and
and monetize
it. You monetize it. You know, are we? You know, crew. We've heard this morning. Another group, crew, a valuable commodity, probably the most valuable commodity, because they're replaceable in terms of, you know, for that family, that group. The vessels are insured, equipment is replaceable, people are not.
That's right.
So we need to treat them as a valuable commodity, but not as a commodity, because we can't churn through them.
Yes, I would say a valuable asset.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm looking for.
You know, it's definitely an asset of the of the vessel, an asset of the owners, you know, and should be. We should continue to find ways to respect and enhance and lift up crew and, you know, encourage more crew coming into our space, and you know, hopefully make the experience better than it's been, and continue that trend.
That's right. But we need to reality check it as well, because we can't put crew on pedestals.
Right.
There's a very fine line, isn't there, between treating them as a very valuable asset, and then telling them, "Oh, but you're so precious."
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to quantify that, because at the end of the day, we as crew are tools.
Yep.
We're either cleaning, driving, maintaining.
Right.
Serving. And there are other, you know, adjectives I can use. But we are tools.
Yes.
Because the yacht's no good without the tool, of the tool being the people. So
that's right.
We mustn't idolize crew, but we must respect them and treat them well.
Totally. Absolutely agree. And hopefully those that are listening can take some of this to heart and start thinking about how we work as an industry to do this. It's a constant conversation. I think it should always be a constant conversation, because there's always just a little bit better we can do. New ideas come to the table. We can pick to other industries and figure out how things are being done in aviation or commercial maritime or whatever that industry may be. Hospitality, you know, take a look at, what they're doing in, some of the finest hotels.
Yeah.
You know, and how.
Yeah, look at the Four Seasons business model. As a good friend of mine, Brendan O'Shaughnessy,
Brendan's a good guy.
Yeah, recently, you know, put a thing about, you know, I think we should learn from the Four Seasons mode of how to do service on yachts, because they make it work. And we don't have any way of standardizing excellence.
And it's measurable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tangible. Yeah. It's measurable. Absolutely. Well, Chris, this has been a fascinating conversation. There's so many rabbit holes to go down.
Oh, yeah.
I really appreciate you taking the time out of a very busy super yacht form now, Mets. It's kind of in its transitionally mode and transitionally, is this a word? Okay, maybe.
One stops today, the other starts today.
Yeah, that's the same thing. But yeah, I look forward to some follow-up with you and really hope that this conversation resonates with some people.
Yeah,
I think it will.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Rick. All right. And thanks for asking me. It was unexpected to be.
Yeah, hopefully added something to your whole time here in Amsterdam.
I hope more than two people listen to it, but we'll see how we go.
I suspect we'll have more than a couple.
Fantastic.
Chris,
pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks for joining us. And until the next time, I'm out of here.